Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Eric Zimmer. He's the host of the One You Feed podcast, and in this conversation, we talk about the meaning behind the title, The One You Feed, as well as talking about mindfulness, good habits, reinforcing positive momentum and motivation moving forward, and much more. I had a great time talking with Eric. I always have a great time talking with another Eric, for that matter. So I know you're going to enjoy this conversation with Eric Zimmer. Well, this week, it is my privilege to welcome to the show Eric Zimmer. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hi, Eric. Thank you for having me.
So I will forgive that your name is spelled with the more popular spelling of Eric, where, or at least I always felt that. Mine is Eric with a K, E-R-I-K. You're Eric with a C, E-R-I-C. And you know, basically, anytime I would go to a store that would have like a rack of keychains or a bunch of mugs, it was always E-R-I-C. It was never E-R-I-K.
The C stands for correct in this case.
Well, and you know, and I, the Eric with a K is more of like a Viking, you know,
That's Scandinavian, right. Kind of that's name.
Right. And I actually have some of that in me from my mom's side. And, you know, that's the strong Viking in me. I would always, you know, gird my loins and say, well, that's fine. I'm just a stronger Eric than the other Eric.
That's right. The weaker German. Yeah. You got to have the strong Viking.
Yes. Yes. So, we talked about this. You've been doing your show for about 5 years now, and it's called The One You Feed. Obviously, there's meaning behind that name. And for people who aren't familiar with your show and don't know, you know, this parable, if you will, that it comes from, I'd love for you to, you know, let's set up the context here. Let's talk about what this one, The One You Feed, what that comes from.
Sure. It's an old parable, and it goes like this. There's a grandfather who's talking with his grandson. He says, in life, there are two wolves inside of us that are always at battle. One is a good wolf, which represents things like kindness and bravery and love. And the other is a bad wolf, which represents things like greed and hatred and fear. And the grandson stops and thinks about it for a second and looks up at his grandfather. He says, well, grandfather, which one wins? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. So that's the parable. Like most good parables, you kind of get it right when you hear it. But I use that parable as sort of a jumping off point with my guests. You know, I read that parable to them and I ask them what it means to them. You know, how does it, you know, how does it reflect on their life and their work?
Yeah, and it's a really good, you know, I'll use the word holistic kind of approach to a lot of the same potential topics as we cover on this show, which is why, you know, it makes sense for you to come and talk about this here, because I think in the end, that's what we're also trying to approach talking about on here, just under the guise of personal productivity.
Right. I mean, ultimately, I think, and you and I would probably agree on this, that a good life is one in which you decide what's important to you, and then you act according to that. I mean, I think that's the basics of it, of what makes a life that's good, and that we would all say, yes, that's a life that feels meaningful.
Yes. Yes. So how in your personal life do you go about feeding the good wolf? And actually, before I ask that question, let me ask this one. Let's pretend I didn't ask that. No. is there a focus difference when it comes to this parable and it comes to your perspective? You know, obviously it talks, you talk about the one that you feed, and obviously that means you're not feeding the other one, but are you doing anything to like how do you refer to them? The good wolf and the bad wolf?
Good wolf, okay. Bad wolf, sure.
So do you put the bad wolf in a cage? In other words, like, you know, you can kind of see what I'm getting at here. You're not only reinforcing the positive of the good wolf by feeding it, but caging and or blocking off the bad wolf.
Well, I mean, I think it depends, you know, exactly what we're talking about. But it's one of the things I like about the parable is it doesn't actually say, you know, we have to cage the bad wolf or we have to beat the good wolf, right? Or the bad wolf. It sort of says, hey, let's give more attention to the good wolf. And so, again, it depends how you want to, you know, quote unquote, look at what the bad wolf is, right? If the bad wolf is the negative emotions that we feel, then, you know, I think that at least what I've come to learn, is that trying to sort of shut off parts of ourselves completely or condemn parts of ourselves doesn't really work. And so in that way, I think, no, you don't put the bad wolf in a cage. If the bad wolf happens to be like it once was for me, like a heroin addiction, then yeah, that bad wolf probably could use a cage, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if your bad wolf happens to be your cell phone when you're trying to do work, then yes, maybe the cell phone needs to go away for a little while. So I think it really depends on the context in which we use it. But I think that in general, I'm not a fan of, like, you know, shutting off huge parts of ourselves or labeling emotions or different parts of ourselves as bad.
Yeah. And I think, you know, ultimately, we've kind of addressed this in terms of focus and goals previously on other episodes of the show, where essentially what we're talking about is if you focus in, if you pay attention to those negative things, if you they even talk about this in the Gallup strength finders, where if you're focusing on your weaknesses, then you're always focusing on improving weaknesses, whether that means that you're focused on the F on the report card instead of the A's, you know, I was on a retreat recently with work, and we went through Gallup's strength finders, and the facilitator, who was awesome, made this statement. He said, and he asked this question, he says, your kid brings home a report card. It's all A's and one F. Which thing are you focusing on?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he said, now here's the thing. The secret to bringing up the F is in the A's. You figure out the A's, how the kid got those A's, and then reverse engineer / dissect, whatever, that F, and then figure, you know, it may be the teacher. It may be the subject matter. It may be whatever, but obviously they've proven they can do it. So that was kind of the line I was going at with, you know, with the dark wolf. And again, the dark wolf represents a lot of different things from gray down all the way down to like black hat, you know, and evil. So, right. You know, it's, I'm not saying like, well, let's starve the dark wolf. It's if it is where like aggression lies, you know, like, again, aggression may not be a bad thing, and maybe sometimes you gotta let that happen, but only maybe partnered with the good wolf, to pull a sleigh metaphorically. I don't know. I'm rambling here, but anyways, you get what I'm saying.
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah, I think it, like I said, I think it depends on kind of what context we're applying it mm-hmm. to, how you want to, you know, how you want to use that. And ultimately, right, it's a parable. It's a metaphor. It's going to fall short in lots and lots of cases.
Sure. Yeah. It's a simplicity kind of an approach to a giant perspective here. So let's flip sides here real quick and say, okay, so if we're moving forward in our life and we're like, you know what? Oh, that does resonate with me. I want to pay attention. I want to be intentional, even in terms of feeding the good wolf, whatever that represents, to me, about me. How have you personally, you know, obviously this resonates with you. You named your show this. How do you feed the good wolf personally for yourself?
For myself, it goes back to what I said a few minutes ago, a little bit, which is identifying kind of what's important to me, what matters, and then making sure that I'm spending time and energy on those things. And so, I mean, for me, there are some basic things that sort of feed my good wolf, and they won't be secrets to anybody who listens to any sort of personal development podcast these days, right? But things like exercise and meditation and eating well. But those arrive to me out of having some experience that sort of shows like those things help me to be the best version of myself. You know, my history, as I, you know, briefly alluded to, right at the age of 24, I was a homeless heroin addict. And so, you know, my bad wolf was kind of out of control at one point. And so, you know, for me, obviously, then feeding my good wolf has to do with feeding my sobriety, with feeding my recovery. I've wrestled with depression throughout my adult life. So feeding my good wolf is, how do I tend to that? How do I take care of that? Feeding my good wolf is kindness towards others and, you know, thinking about what other people want. I mean, one of the things for me that has become apparent over the last number of years is that the more myopic my perspective gets, and by myopic, I mean, the more it just focuses on me and how I'm feeling, then that's kind of the bad wolf for me, because the world kind of shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. And anything that helps increase my perspective and broadens it and makes it bigger, for me, in a lot of cases, tends to be feeding the good wolf.
And so you mentioned a couple of different methodologies that you're doing that with. I think it'd be great to, you know, again, maybe go into some of those. I think the one that, you know, of all of the different subjects that we've talked about on this show before, the one we haven't spent nearly as much time on is that mindfulness and meditation practice. So I'd love for you to maybe give us a bit of an introduction into, one, how did you come to start using that, and what form and function does that take for you?
Well, I was originally introduced to Zen Buddhism when I was like 16 years old from a high school teacher, and it kind of fascinated me. And I think, you know, back then, what sort of, to the extent that I understood it, which was not really well, to the extent I understood it, I got the idea that we tend to cause a lot of our own suffering. And so that for me, I think was, I kind of got that it sort of registered with me. And certainly as I got sober, you know, 8 years later, 9 years later, that became really clear to me, like, holy mackerel, I am sort of the architect of most of the suffering in my life. And so Buddhism sort of pointed a way for me out of that. And that's where the mindfulness tradition, such as we understand it in meditation, the way most of us understand it, sort of originates from. It comes out of a Buddhist tradition, and it's been secularized to a great deal, which is depending on who you ask, is a good or bad thing. In my mind, it's a good thing. So that's kind of where it comes from. And you know, I feel like I'm sort of beating the drum again of kind of the thing I said early on. But if you look at the idea of, hey, thinking about what's important to me and then making sure that that's how I'm actually spending my life is one way of looking at mindfulness, right? Mindfulness, if you want to take it incredibly literally, means what is my mind full of? Right? What is going on in my mind? What is it that I'm spending my time thinking about? As I go about my day, what are the contents of my mind? Is it constructive? Is it negative? Am I telling myself stories that are helpful to me, or am I telling myself stories that are hurtful to me? So at its most basic, that's what mindfulness is. And then meditation is a practice, right? Mindfulness would sort of be, what's my mind full of? Paying attention to what my mind is doing, being present. And meditation is sort of for most people, is a focused version of that. I actually sit down and I do a meditation practice. Now, there are lots of different types of meditation practice. They seem to be proliferating, but most of them orient around an idea of you pick some sort of focus. So that focus could be your breath. That focus could be on the sensations in your body. That focus could be a mantra. It could be a phrase, right? But you pick some sort of focus, and then you try and pay attention to that focus, and inevitably your mind wanders off and starts thinking, and you realize, oh, there, my mind is off wandering. Let me come back to my focus. And you do that again and again and again. And it has all kinds of different benefits depending on, you know, what you're looking for. I mean, at its most basic, it strengthens concentration, right? Mm-hmm. That's a basic concentration practice. It's like, I want to pay attention to this. My mind wanders. I come back. And so I slowly get a little bit better at paying attention to this thing. So if we want to look at it just from that perspective, strengthening concentration strengthens everything that we want to do. There appears to be a lot of evidence that shows that meditation helps with reducing stress. So there's these very secular benefits of it. And then there is a deeper sense of it being a practice that helps us to see the truth or reality of life, which, again, we could go more into depending on how far into Buddhist thought you want to go with that, right? But I think that it's a way of, if you start to see what your mind is full of, and you start to see the ways that your brain does the sort of same things over and over again, you start to sort of, you're able to sort of intuit the patterns of your mind. And if you can intuit the patterns of your mind, you're more likely to be able to see reality truly.
I mean, I can't help but think that we've got this constant, like we've talked about, we even alluded to it earlier, one of the, you know, the very gray areas of the dark or the black wolf is this, again, putting your phone in a cage, you know, and if we've constantly got, so, I mean, and I'm not saying every distraction comes from a phone, but it sure does help. And, you know, and in this modern age where we've forgotten how precious being bored can be, which is kind of almost a neutral state when compared to always on, or as I would maybe put in meditation. And again, this is subject to open judgment on any listener's part. I freely accept it. But meditation being almost an active stasis or stance in, you know, again, assessing what's on your mind, and the active busyness on the other end of the spectrum being a kind of active not thinking about what's on your mind, in a sense, that boredom in the center, in that middle where you're not doing anything at all, which actually can be very healthy. That's the kind of spectrum that's kind of coming up in my mind as you say these things.
Yep, makes sense, totally.
So, and you know, for somebody, again, for somebody who is apprehensive, maybe they've tried doing meditation at some point in the past, like, what's a good way to enter into maybe getting past some of those past learned objections, or even just ones they've held all along and never tried it before?
Yeah, I think it depends what the nature of those objections are, right? A very common one, more and more these days, because most people have heard of meditation and have been intrigued enough about it that they're like, huh, okay, that seems like it might be worth doing. But what an awful lot of people will say is, I can't do it, right?
Yeah.
I can't meditate. I sit down to meditate and my brain is just so busy, I can't quiet my mind, I can't meditate, which is sort of missing the I won't say the point. It's missing the truth of it, which is that most nobody can do meditation if by what you mean is you silence your brain, right? One of the things that meditation will do, if you actually do it earnestly and pay attention to it, is what you will realize is you are not causing the thoughts to come. You'll right. sit down and you'll go, let me pay attention to my breath. Okay, I'm going to follow my breath. And then you're thinking. And then you're like, oh, goodness, here I'm thinking again. All right, let me follow my breath. And then you're thinking. And this happens over and over and over and over. And what this can be, you can take this one of two ways. You could take this as very bad news, right? You can go, oh, geez, you know, I'm terrible at this. Or you can sort of look at it and go, huh, well, if I'm not generating those thoughts, where are they coming from? What's causing the thought if I'm not causing the thought, right? And you suddenly embark into a different relationship with your thoughts, because we very much have this idea of there's this I and I think these things. Mm-hmm. But when you meditate, you realize that's not the way this is working. You're not consciously choosing, oh, now I'm going to think about my lunch. Oh, now I'm going to think about this project at work that's not done. Now I'm going to think about my mother-in-law. You're actively trying not to do that, and there they are, right? And so I find that very interesting, because I'm like, huh, if I'm not doing that, that's interesting. So it gives us a different relationship. And so the thing that I would say is really critical for meditation for me, and this made a big difference for me, because I tried to meditate on and off again for about 20 years. And now I've been meditating pretty much daily for about 6.5 years. And there were a couple of big differences, but one of the largest was I suddenly stopped judging success on whether I could stop my brain from thinking thoughts. Because if we think that the goal is that we shouldn't think, and because that's what you're trying to do in meditation, you're like, I'm trying to pay attention to my breath, and then I think, and then I'm trying to pay attention to my breath, and I think. What happens is that we go, I suck at this. And who wants to sit and do something that you fail at about every 15 seconds?
Yeah.
Right? And so a more useful way to think of it is to realize that moment when your brain has wandered off and you have caught it, and then you bring it back to your anchor, that is meditation. It's the equivalent of a bicep curl. When you do a bicep curl, right, That's the curl is you move from the bottom of the motion to the top. That's where the strength comes. Same thing in meditation. When you realize your mind has wandered and you bring it back to the object, that is the exercise. And it's going to happen over and over and over again. And if you can sort of not see that as a failure, you're way more likely to meditate. And stick with it, because that's just kind of what brains do. And so really learning to have a different relationship to that is really helpful, because most of us think we're failing. And when we feel like we're failing, like I said, we just don't want to do it. And so meditation becomes miserable. For a lot of people, it becomes miserable because it's sitting there going, I can't keep my brain on this one thing, I'm failing. And so really changing that relationship is important.
I know this may seem antithetical to the cause of, and again, it may be what's the approach that you're trying to come to learn / use meditation for? But I wonder, there's all these meditation apps out there, and, I think there's some worth in there. That said, and there's even guided meditations and things like that, but for somebody who is in the self-help realm, there's not a lack of the next thing to help you do the thing that you're missing in your life, kind of a vibe, right? You get what I'm saying there. And so there can be a lot of confusion, like, oh no, I have to have an app, but I don't want to say an app wouldn't help. In fact, I've used an app and had some help there. What's your perspective on this?
Well, apps can be useful for a couple of different reasons, right? Ultimately, you don't need an app. All you really need is to sit down and walk and, sort of do what I just described. But an app can be really helpful because it does a few things. It can provide you some encouragement on how to do it. It can remind you, like if you're sitting there and your mind has wandered off an app, occasionally someone will come in and say, hey, remember, we're trying to pay attention to this. And you'll be like, oh yeah, reminder. Okay, I come back to it. So apps can be helpful. They keep track of it, how much you've meditated, how long you've meditated. And that seems to be something that makes us more likely to continue, right? If we look at behavior change in general, tracking our progress is something that seems to help. So there are benefits of apps for sure, but they're certainly not necessary either.
One of the ones that I've used, I'm using also for other things. You may be aware of it or not. It's called brain.fm. And I use it to help me focus or read, or even I've used it to help take naps or sleep. And there's also meditation in there. And the whole reasoning behind it is the science of it's the sound production that helps you get to a certain kind of, let's say, brain state quicker. Mm-hmm. And so, I kind of see it as partly a crutch to lean on in terms of meditation, but it's not guiding you. It's still on you to do it, but it helps you get, quote, there quicker to then practice in that state. And, it's almost the way I look at it is, you mentioned bicep curls earlier. This is almost like a treadmill in a sense. It forces you to do it or it helps you get there quicker because, you're standing on the treadmill and it's moving. So you kind of have to move, I guess, is kind of the way I'm putting it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I think, like I said, meditation is such a broad, there's so many different ways of approaching it, right? You hear people say like, well, here's meditation music you can listen to. Here's guided meditations. It kind of depends, it's useful to be a little bit more specific. I'm giving a very broad treatment, right? But the essence of it, in its most basic state is, can you find something that you sort of anchor on as something that you pay attention to when your mind wanders, you come back. And there are lots of different things out there that claim that help you to do this better. I was looking at, there's these EEG headbands, right? That read your brain waves, right? And they're supposed to tell you whether you're getting into a meditative state. I don't know, not quite sure what I think about the usefulness of that. I'm a big believer in like what works for you. Everybody's a little bit different.
Yeah, and even those, being able to see, like being able to literally visualize, if it's in fact doing it, visualize the brain state, like hitting that, you know, threshold, certain threshold, I guess, is interesting to me. In some senses, because it's almost like gamification of meditation at that point, you know,
not necessarily a bad idea.
No, not necessarily. No. Cause I mean, if you kind of are aware of what takes to get into, you know, I'll just say into that zone, you know, for you personally, because of a tool, then by then having that foreknowledge, you can get there quicker. Again, maybe, or easier. I don't know. I'm hypothesizing here. So,
right. Yeah. I think it really depends. Like, what are your goals with meditation, or why are you doing it?
Eric and I are going to talk more about feeding the good wolf in a moment. But first, we're going to say thank you to our sponsors for making this episode possible. And speaking of feeding the good wolf, one of the best ways to do that is to start your morning the right way. I've been doing this personally, whether it's a morning where I am getting up super early to get some stuff done, or I'm intentionally sleeping in a little bit later till right before my family gets up. Either way, I'm kickstarting my day with energy and motivation with the Early Bird Morning Cocktail from Club Early Bird. How this works is every night I mix the Early Bird powder and water into the Early Bird cocktail shaker cup, and then I put it on my nightstand. Then in the morning when my alarm goes off, I give it another quick shake and then immediately drink my Early Bird Morning Cocktail, and it gives me energy, motivation, starts my day the right way without brain fog, improves my mood. And how it does that is threefold. Number one, it's immediate hydration beginning the day from electrolytes, because again, hydration is not just about water. On top of that, there's coffee bean extract and an antioxidant blend of over 25 fruits and veggies and B vitamins. And then on top of that, for a mood boost, it has patented nootropics like ashwagandha, which basically is like vitamins for the brain. And we all know somebody who, even though they're drinking their coffee first thing in the morning, is still grumpy. But not me. Now I wake up every morning, drink my Early Bird Morning Cocktail from Club Early Bird, and my mornings are full of energy, motivation, and focus. So I want you to try the Early Bird Morning Cocktail. So I've arranged a special offer for 15% off your first tub. Go to clubearlybird.com/beyond to get this special offer. Trust me, you need to try this. That's clubearlybird.com/beyond. One of the other ways that I'm feeding the good wolf and making great progress, I stepped on the scale this week and I am 30 plus pounds lighter than about 6 months ago, earlier this year. And not only is that thanks to consistent physical activity over that period, but it's also due to the work I've been doing with my coach at MetPro. MetPro is a concierge nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle coaching. They do a metabolic profiling assessment and consultation to get you started, where you learn about your metabolism and you receive personalized advice from a metabolic expert. And by knowing your metabolism, you're better able to lean into your individual way of moving forward and getting personalized advice from a metabolic expert. And like I said, it's working for me. I am 30 plus pounds, almost 40 now, actually, lighter than I was over 6 months ago, earlier this year, which is great for me to be ending out the year on. And I'd love for you to see results like I have. So MetPro is offering a complimentary metabolic profiling assessment and consultation. Just go over to metpro.co/beyond. That's metpro.co/beyond. This episode is also brought to you by creditrepair.com. Are you one of the millions of Americans who have inaccurate or unfair negative items hurting their credit score? CreditRepair.com believes everyone deserves an accurate and fair credit report. CreditRepair.com helps you get it by working with you to check, challenge, and change your credit score. CreditRepair.com can help with collections, late payments, charge-offs, liens, bankruptcies, and repossessions. Your credit won't fix itself, but CreditRepair.com makes it easy to stay connected to your credit repair journey. Previous members have seen an average 40-point TransUnion credit score gain during 4 months of membership. Repairing your credit can be hard, but calling is easy. Call a credit advisor today and let them help you rewrite your credit story. Head over to the link in our show notes at beyondthetodolist.com/301 to sign up today for a free 15-minute credit analysis. And this episode's brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/beyond. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEYOND. ZipRecruiter.com/beyond. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Obviously, this is a productivity show, so we're talking about time and attention and energy. I guess in some senses, we were just talking about attention when it comes to meditation. Yeah. Duh. But is there any way, obviously, feeding the good wolf, you've got to, one, remember to feed the wolf, almost like a chore, but maybe not looking at it like a chore, but maybe looking at it as investing in yourself. Do you have any, approaches that have worked best for you in terms of making sure you're blocking out the time as well as the energy to feed the good wolf for yourself?
Well, I think it's, probably a lot of the basic ideas that you talk about here, which is sort of how do I capture what's important to me, and then how do I make sure I'm doing it, And so, I use a to-do list, I use Evernote, I have the to-do list in a certain way that I do that. I keep track of certain habits that I want to do on a regular basis. So I've kind of got a lot of those same structures that I think a lot of people who perform at some sort of high level have.
Are there certain habits that over time, you've had to, obviously having come from the addictive past that you've had, that's stuff that you've overcome. So, you'd had experience with that, but how about creating a brand new habit for yourself?
Yeah, I've created a bunch of habits, and actually teaching people how to create new habits and behaviors is a big part of what I do in the coaching work that I do, which is like, okay, how do you actually create a new habit or behavior and make it stick? For me, I sort of look at it as there's these basic fundamentals to me. My fundamentals, and again, I think they're pretty common, right? But the things that make it so that I can perform at a higher level and live a life that's happier, those things are exercise, eating right, meditation, sleeping well. So those are I think of those as sort of the foundation behaviors for me, that when I do those things consistently, I'm in a much better place to do all the additional things in life that are important to me.
Right. Yeah. Those are kind of the foundational, if you've put in the time to make sure you're doing those things, then you're operating out of optimum, I'll say efficiency or attention. You're not tired. You're not weak-willed because you're tired. So you're able to follow through on, again, consistently showing up for those new habits that you're wanting to build.
Right. Yeah. Those things for me are kind of fundamental to being able to do that. Like I've said before, partially, those are what's I think is interesting about that suite of habits I just recommended is they seem to be fairly well indicated across a whole bunch of different things. Are you concerned about your physical health? Good. Those things are all recommended for good physical health. Are you worried about your mental health, cognitive health? Great. Those things are all indicated for that. Are you worried about your emotional health, depression or anxiety? Those things are all indicated for that. And so I like them because they sort of have a very wide applicability. And so then it's like, I don't necessarily have like 15 things I have to do for my physical health and 15 things I have to do for my cognitive health and 15 things I have to do for my mental and emotional health, right? They kind of cover a lot of bases, those sort of pillars.
Well, and they carry a lot of, let's just say permeating positive qualities that then feed into all the other things, you know, and they even have a synergy of working together. Like if you're talking sleep and you're talking diet and physical activity all working together, then suddenly, hey, if you were trying to get in, like as we were talking about earlier, getting to a habit of meditating, because you're not fatigued in your mind and your body and your, I guess even your spirit, you're going to find that the ability, even if you're a newbie to it, you're going to find that being able to have a thought arise and then bring your mind back, it's going to be easier than it would have when you're fighting all these other exterior forces or interior forces for that matter.
Absolutely. I think that's very well said.
So, I mean, obviously those are some bare-boned, not bare-boned, those are some foundational habits there for sure that kind of, you know, they create that solid foundation to then, you know, build other good habits upon. There's also the factor of environment and how that plays into, you know, our habits. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that? Like, how do you, when you know there's new habits you're trying to create, or you're talking with your clients about building new habits, how do you help them, you know, basically have wisdom or a discerning eye towards their environment as to what, and again, this goes right back into feeding the good wolf and there is, and it even goes back to what I was talking about earlier, a little bit about caging the bad wolf in terms of setting up a proper environment for habits.
Right. Well, I think there's a basic principle, which is just that if there's something you want to do more of, how can you make it as easy as possible to do it? Eliminate as many steps between you and that behavior as possible. And if you want to make something harder to do, put as many barriers between you and that action as you can. So, I mean, that's the basic principle that kind of applies everywhere. So depending on what it is you want to do, you sort of look at that and try and design it. And when you start talking about some of this stuff, some of it is so stupidly obvious, right? But still really important, you know? So like I'm a guitar player, right? And so having my guitar out on a stand versus in its case makes a big difference. Now, my brain tells me it shouldn't. My brain tells me like, that's ridiculous. It takes all of about 45 seconds to open the guitar case, to take it out and to put it in your hands, right? So we're talking about a minute difference between it being on a stand and in a case. And yet I play it a whole lot more when it's just sitting on the stand than I do when it's in the case, right? And so that's an obvious example. You know, if you don't want to eat junk food, don't have any in the house. Again, sort of an obvious example, but we'd be surprised how often people don't do that. So, you know, when you're thinking about like building a habit or building a new habit or getting rid of a bad habit, right? There's different factors that come into play. Motivation and the emotion of it is one of them. But the other is how easy or hard is it to do, right? And that's a whole lot easier to work with and change than necessarily your emotional state or your motivation. So you're well served to spend more time on the environmental aspects of it, you know, really design the environment as much as you can to support whichever of those two directions you're going.
It's not just getting the guitar that's in its case out from, say, a closet or wherever it's properly put away, you know, but it's having the guitar already out. And, you know, how much time does it, estimate, how much time does it take to take it out of the case in all actuality? 30 seconds?
Something like that. Yeah, 30 seconds to a minute. It's not very much.
But that amount of time isn't necessarily something that we're thinking about in terms of the barrier to frequently practicing.
Right. Yeah, I'm often amazed, you know, like there's a lot of times when it comes to exercise, it feels like to me that like getting my gym clothes on is a barrier, right? Like, which is ridiculous, but still, that's, you know, we are more animal than we think in a lot of ways, right? And so, you know, all these little things, you know, you think of them as points of friction, right? you eliminate all those little points of friction, and you're a lot more likely to do something. I mean, with me and the guitar, it's like, do I have a tuner that's clipped to the guitar? Again, more likely that I'm going to pick it up and play it. Because if I look at the guitar, I'm like, I bet it's not in tune. I wonder where the tuner is, right? I mean, all those little things, you know, and I often say that, you know, you know, when you have more steps to go through, you're just a lot less likely to do it, which again, you can use to your benefit if you're trying to get rid of a habit, but it really acts in your disadvantage if you're trying to build one. And so there is really intelligent design of your environment. And your environment is, you know, things like we just talked about, like whether the guitar is in the case or on the shelf, but your environment is also who is supporting you. How are you reminded to do things? You know, what are your prompts for doing it? There's lots of levels to this that can be worked through. And I tend to think of behavior change as having sort of, and when I work with somebody, I look at it from two regards, right? I look at what I call sort of the basic blocking and tackling. And this is things like, do I know when I'm going to do it? Do I know where I'm going to do it? Have I deconstructed it into a small enough activity that I know exactly what to do? Is it a small enough activity that it's not overwhelming? Do I have people supporting me? Do I have the right prompts? All that kind of stuff. I think of it as like the very tactical blocking and tackling. And then there's the whole emotional aspect of it. And this is things like motivation, and all that stuff. And so I always say, like, let's get the first part of that solved. Get the blocking and tackling done. Then once we have all that very well arranged, then we are able to, if there are still blocks, we're able to identify those a whole lot more easily. But most people never get to that point. You know, very vague, and I'm sure you talk about this often, very vague intentions aren't very good, right? It's one thing to be like, man, I really should exercise more this week. Like, that's a very vague intention. On the other hand, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning at 7:30 a.m., I am going to step outside and run around the block two times, that's specific, right? And then if I have a prompt at 7:30 in the morning to tell me it's time to do it, then if I don't do it, okay, now we go, all right, well, it looks like I kind of set everything up to give me every chance of doing it. If I'm not doing it, okay, now maybe I do need to look at motivation or competing priorities or other things. But it's important to get that first step done before we get into trying to troubleshoot other things. But most people go exactly the opposite. They don't do that basic stuff. And then when they don't do the habit, they go, I'm just not motivated, or I'm lazy, or I'm right. And so it makes a lot of sense to start with environment and then work our way back to and end with what's going on with us motivationally, emotionally, et cetera, instead of starting from the assumption that that's where the problem is.
Now, say we've got a good habit already in place, and you know, by all intentions, it means it's almost, you know, muscle memory. We don't overthink it. We just do it. We've gotten to that point. But we all know we've had good things in our life, good habits in our life, to that point, but had over time, an erosion, where we aren't as consistent, and then we're not consistent at all. And then we kind of give it up. How can we protect against that?
Well, I think that one of the important things is to realize that there is not any degree of perfection, right? So inevitably, my experience is that whatever we're trying to do, we're not going to do perfectly. But a lot of us have some sort of all or nothing thinking, right? So we're going along and we're doing well. We're running on we're running 5 days a week, and that feels really good. And then next week comes and we have to travel for work and we miss a couple days, or our kid gets sick and we miss 3 days, right? And then what happens to a lot of us is that we start to have a lot of negative talk around that. Like, oh, geez, I didn't run this week at all. See, I knew I really can't stick with anything. We're shocked by the fact that we slipped, instead of going, oh yeah, that's perfectly normal. How do I get back on this just as soon as I can? Right. So I think expecting that we're not going to do perfect is really important. So, for example, I talk about like meditating daily and eating right and exercising regularly. My goal is about 90% adherence. So if my goal is to exercise 6 days a week, what I'm really after is if I'm doing that about 90% of the time. But if I'm doing that 90% of the time, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, that's where real transformation occurs. But if I'm expecting perfection, then when I fail, I'm very disappointed. And disappointment leads us to start to move away from things. And so it's kind of normal that there's going to be some waxing and waning. It's important to kind of keep an eye on it and go, okay, well, boy, the last few days I haven't done very good. So it's really important that I try and get back to it today. So I think that's one major piece of it.
So it seems like there's potentially a gap to bridge there between consistency and aiming for, like, for example, you're saying, with physical activity, let's just say you're aiming for 90%. And so if we were going to say there's 7 days in the week and 90%, let's just say that that's 6 days or five and a half. I don't know how you half work out on one day, but whatever. So let's just say six days, let's round up. And so if out of those 7 days, if you're going in with the intention that you're going to hit 90%, you may hit less than that potentially, because for example, if Sunday through Saturday, each day, say on Sunday, you're like, I'm kind of answering my own question as I say this out loud. So bear with me. I figure things out as I talk. That's why that's why we're podcasters. if say Sunday, I'm like, 90% means I can skip today. Then Monday, I better do it. Or I've now already gone down to 75% or whatever. Again, not working out the math here, literally.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to get at here is, are you aiming for 100% and accepting 90? Or are you aiming for 90 and then it starts to fall apart?
No, I'm aiming for 100. If I'm saying I'm going to exercise 6 days a week, my goal is to exercise 6 days a week. And that's what I aim for, right? But I don't look at it a week at a time necessarily, right? Because again, I'm looking at long-term sustained change. So if my goal is to work out 6 days a week, right? And there's 52 weeks in a year, right? That's 312 days a year, right? And so if I want to hit 90% of those, that's 280, which means there's something about 30 days a year, once a month or so, or a couple times a month that I miss. But I'm shooting for every day, but I'm accepting that things happen, right? Mm. So it's not so much like, I can still be at 90 if I don't work out today. It's that life inevitably gets in the way. Right? With all the best intentions, a lot of your listeners probably have children. If you have children, something is going to happen that is going to disrupt your best laid plans. If you have parents, I have elderly parents, right? Something is going to happen that is going to disrupt my best laid plans. And I'm planning to work out today. And you know what? Mom has to go to the doctor. Okay, well, I did the best I could. But what happens is if we are looking at perfection, then when I have to take mom to the doctor 2 days in a row and I fall off my habit, there starts to be some subtle negativity that starts to creep in. And I think I'm failing, I'm screwing up, I'm not doing well. Whereas if I go, you know what, there's going to be some of that, I don't take it so badly, right? And one of the things with building a good habit, right, is you want to really celebrate when you do well. There's a researcher out of Stanford, BJ Fogg, who writes a lot about how to change behavior. And he has a phrase that I like. He says, we change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad, right? And so we're more likely to do something when we feel like we are being successful at it, right? And so if we start to feel like we're failing because we missed a couple days this week because of having to take mom to the doctor, that often leads into a self-fulfilling prophecy where we go, see, I couldn't stick with it. I knew I wouldn't be able to stick with it. I was doing good and now I'm screwing up. And that negativity drops our motivation, right? And so that's kind of more the way I'm speaking of it.
Well, and these things all feed back around on themselves as you feed the good wolf. Back when we were originally talking about meditation, where that then helps, with sleep, helps with physical activity, helps with diet. And again, all making some progress in any one of those areas then starts to spill over into the other areas, which then reinforces the other areas again and vice versa and so on and so forth. And so, again, making some progress and then having the right mindset for when, you know, that so for when that that negative self-talk comes up, then you've got almost, it's almost like building a force field in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Man, we could go on for a lot longer. I think what's best is I just direct people over to your show so they can continue the conversation and the conversations that you're having with others on this very topic. So where's the best place for people to go check out your show? Other than, I guess, obviously, they look up The One You Feed in their podcast player of choice.
Yeah, that's the best way to get the podcast. If you want to go to our website and learn more about the coaching work or other stuff we do, you can go to oneyoufeed.net, and it's all spelled out, oneyoufeed.net.
Perfect. Eric, so glad to have you on the show, and fascinating conversation, and let's pick it up again sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, Eric, for having me on. I really enjoyed talking with you and really respect the work that you do.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your podcast listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Eric Zimmer. And as you were listening, you were thinking of ways to feed your good wolf. And if you can think of somebody else who needs to hear this podcast episode, I would love for you to do me the favor of sharing this with that person or persons. Just hit the share button on your podcast player app of choice that you're listening to this on, or head over to the show notes for this episode at beyondthetodolist.com/301. Make sure to subscribe if you're not already. And thanks again for sharing. Thanks again for listening. And I'll see you next episode.